It's time for our weekly fact-checking visit with PolitiFact Virginia, and we're joined again this morning by Sean Gorman. Hi, Sean.
Hello, Wayne.
A few items to ask you about that recently appeared in the PolitiFact Virginia column. The first I want to ask you about is a statement made by George Allen, who's, the Republican nominee for Senate in Virginia and a former governor and a former senator running against former Democratic Governor Tim Kaine for that U.S. Senate seat. And Allen made a claim that the state government workforce grew when Tim Kaine was governor. You checked his facts, and what was your finding?
Well, Allen's campaign cited U.S. Census figures from March 2006 to March 2010, and those numbers do show that between those months, the number of state workers rose by about 2,100 full-time equivalent employees. But Kaine started as governor in mid-January 2006 and left in mid-January 2010, so Allen's counting a time that starts about 2 months after Kaine took office and 2 months after he left. Now, the Virginia Department of Human Resource Management tallies the size of the state workforce at the end of each month, and we looked at the number of workers in the executive branch, since that's the branch the governor has most control over. Now, if you look at December 31st of 2005, 2 weeks before Kaine took office, and December 31st, 2009, 2 weeks before he left, the number of state workers fell by around 2,900 between those dates. But if you look at January 31, 2006 to January 31, 2010, the number of workers rose slightly by 295. And unlike the census numbers, the state figures show a drop in the state workforce from March 2006 to March 2010. The number of employees declined by about 828 between those dates, according to the state tallies. So determining the size or determining the increase or decrease depends on when you start counting. Allen's information doesn't entirely align with Kaine's tenure, and his numbers are not coming from state government. Using state numbers, Allen is barely right by one measure and wrong by two others, so we rate the claim mostly false.
All right. In the 7th District, Eric Cantor, the Republican incumbent and majority leader, of course, of the House in Washington, is being challenged by Democrat Wayne Powell for the congressional seat there. And Powell made a campaign claim that Cantor received more money this year from oil companies than any other member of Congress. That was one you checked out. What did you find?
Well, we contacted Powell's campaign to see how they justified this statement. Now, Dave Mudcat Saunders, an advisor for Powell, acknowledged that the statement is not accurate, and the campaign took it down. Now, that statement was replaced by a new claim saying Eric Cantor has received huge donations from big oil companies, according to the Powell campaign. Now, OpenSecrets.org, that's a website that tracks campaign donations, ranks Cantor as the 10th highest recipient in Congress of contributions from oil and gas industry groups. His $187,000 in campaign contributions from those groups this election cycle trails Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, who topped the list with about $360,000. So Powell's campaign has apologized and changed their statement. We applaud them for changing the statement, but we still have to rate the original claim false.
Okay. Now, finally, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce has been running an ad attacking Tim Kaine, the Democratic candidate for Senate in Virginia, and claiming that he supported higher energy costs for families when he was governor. What'd you find?
Well, the chamber pointed to testimony Kaine gave before a U.S. Senate hearing on climate change in 2007. Now, Kaine said he supported a cap-and-trade program for emissions of all greenhouse gases. Now, soon after Kaine's testimony, legislation was introduced to implement a cap-and-trade system, and Kaine did not say whether he specifically supported a particular bill. Under cap-and-trade, the government limits allowable greenhouse gas emissions. Companies emitting carbon dioxide would have to either reduce emissions by using cleaner technology or get credits from the government, either given or sold through an auction to exceed limits. Now, the U.S. Energy Information Administration said the 2007 legislation would cause gas prices to increase by 41 to 101 cents per gallon by 2030, and depending on the development of technology used to capture and store carbon emissions, the EIA said the average annual cost of household energy bills would increase by between $76 and $723 in 2030. Now, Brandi Hoffman, a Kaine spokeswoman, said noted that some cap-and-trade proposals would have funneled proceeds from auctions back to consumers through rebates, and she pointed to a study about a 10-state compact for a cap-and-trade system that was put in place in 2009, and a study of that system found consumers saved a net $1.1 billion compared to what the grid system would have been without the cap and trade system, primarily because states put auction proceeds toward energy efficiency programs. So the assertion that cap and trade leads to higher energy prices is reasonable, but it depends on the specifics of the plan. The Chamber of Commerce cannot point to an instance where Keynes directly supported a specific measure that would raise energy bills, so we rate this claim mostly false.
I see. Okay. Sean Gorman of PolitiFact Virginia, checking the facts with us each Tuesday morning here on WCVE's broadcast of Morning Edition.
Thanks, Wayne.